And then please open your Bibles to James chapter 1, verse 26. James chapter 1, verse 26 for the text of our lesson this morning. If anyone among you thinks he is religious, but does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. In the study of history of the Middle Ages, which I'm sure everybody here is just greatly interested in, there was a period of about 3 years in the middle of the 14th century, about 1348 to 1350. You will have a test on this, of course. That about a third to a quarter of the population of the European continent died, was decimated by what was called the Black Plague. That was the result, people now know, of the spread of rats that came in to Italy probably, or maybe into Turkey and across to the west from there, from the Silk Road that ran from China back to Europe. And black rats were carried along, or actually they hitched a ride along, and came into Europe from either Italy or Turkey or both, and they carried with them fleas. And those little creatures, those tiny little fleas, carried that terrible germ or whatever it was that causes the Black Plague, and it spread quickly. We sometimes say like a virus, but the like is not it really was either a virus or a germ, and I don't know which, but it spread violently all across Europe, and in just a 2 or 3 year span, 1348 to 1350, a third to a half of the European continent, of people in the European continent, died. That's amazing, isn't it, when you think about how awful that plague was that spread across Europe at that time. And that, I think, also is an illustration to us as how something that is very small can have a great deal of power. Now, I was thinking when I was writing this sermon, something as small as a rat, if you have to ever encounter a rat face to face, they don't look small at all, but they are. But actually something much smaller than that rat was the real cause. It was the fleas that the rats carried that was the real cause of that terrible plague that decimated the whole European continent over that 2 or 3 year span. And thus, sometimes things that are small can cause a great deal of harm. Things that are small can be very powerful. Well, we want to talk about the tongue and how the tongue is something that is very small but is very powerful. In our text in James chapter 1 verse 26, if anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue. Now the word bridle there, of course, is used from the fact that we use a bridle to control a horse. Horse is a great beast that is much larger than we are. But with a bridle, if the horse has been trained, you can control that animal, as great as that animal is, maybe a half ton or so. And so the tongue is small, but it has great power. But he says, whoever does not bridle his tongue but he and thinks he is religious, he deceives himself, and his religion is useless. I don't want to have a useless religion. It's by means of our religious obedience to God, based on our faith, that we have the hope of a home in heaven. And if our religion is useless, then our hope for a home in heaven is baseless, and we won't have a home in heaven. So if something causes my religion to be useless, or as the Old King James Version says, vain, which means empty, void, of no good whatsoever, if something causes that, then I need to get that something out of my life. An unbridled tongue is something that will cause our lives, our religion, to be useless. And it does no good to try to serve God if we have that unbridled tongue. I'm going to talk about today bridling that tongue and how important that it is. The tongue is something very small but very dangerous. We've talked about that before. In Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, Solomon said, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." and those who love it will eat its fruit. That's a very graphic proverb. Your tongue and my tongue has the power to impart life or the power to impart death. With our tongues, we can talk to a friend or a neighbor who is not a Christian. We can tell that person how to be saved. We can exhort that person to give their life to Jesus Christ by faith and obedience to His will and leave that person to life everlasting. That same tongue can be used to spread a slander or to spread a lie, an accusation that might bring that person to literal physical death. It could be done if it's done in a trial. Or it could cause spiritual death by causing that person to become embittered because of the slander that destroyed his reputation. Now, I want to make this point at this point in our lesson. The tongue can destroy, my tongue can destroy somebody else's reputation. But nobody can destroy your character except you yourself. Character is something that you accomplish or don't accomplish yourself. Reputation is what people think that you are. And the misuse of the tongue can cause the destruction of an otherwise good reputation. Nobody can destroy your character but you yourself. But nonetheless, you see here the power of the tongue to bring about either death or to bring about life. But then the second half of that, and this is very, very important. You know, I make my living with my tongue. And so I have to be very, very careful about the use of my tongue. But all of us have to be careful about the use of the tongue. He says, those who love it will eat the fruit of it. Now, to eat the fruit of it means that you bear the results of having used it. If you like to talk, then you're going to have to put up with what is the result of your talking. And so you'd better get that tongue bridled. You better bring it under control. We see, therefore, the great power that is in the tongue, and the tongue as an untamable member of the body. And we've talked about this in the past lesson in James chapter 3. That we have to cage that tongue. In James chapter 3, verses 7 and 8, it says, with it we bless God, our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. And he says, he tells us there that every kind of bird and of beast and serpent, of reptile, a serpent of a creature in the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Now, what do you do? Now, I know this is a repetition of something I've said before about what we do with the tongue. What do you do with an untamable beast that has the power to cause great harm? You put it in a cage and you don't let it out. And that's what we have to do with our tongues when we lose control of our emotions or when we've lost control. If we use the tongue, we're going to do some harm. You cage it up. And the Lord has given you some pearly white bars to put that tongue behind. And you keep it there until you've got it under control. And for those that have lost those pearly white bars, He's given some shutters outside we can use also. So we can keep that beast, that untamable beast, behind bars until we've got it under control. And make sure that we don't cause harm and cause our religion to be useless. Now I want to make some application of those points today about bridling the tongue. And I want to specifically look at some things that we will not do. Some ways we will not use our tongues if we have a bridled tongue. And at the very outset, I think what we've already established is the importance that we not just be talking without thinking about what we're saying. As sometimes we say, his mouth is running, but his brain's not in gear. And that happens sometimes to most all of us, doesn't it? We need to make sure that before we open our mouth, not only is our brain in gear, but we thought about what we're saying and is going to accomplish harm or good. Is our tongue truly bridled? So let's talk about some ways that we will not use our tongues if our tongues are bridled. Turn over to Revelation again, please. Revelation chapter 21, verse 8. Here's a list of the kinds of people who will not go to heaven. Revelation chapter 21, verse 8. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Now, sometimes people put lying in categories. And they talk about, well, that was just a little white lie. And you know, I told that lie to keep from hurting her feelings. And I know it wasn't really exactly right, but I just didn't want to hurt her feelings, so I said it this way. And so you talk about a little white lie that you didn't do it to cause any harm. And then there's this big black lie, we think, because we meant to do harm with that lie. Well, is that a categorization that the Scriptures recognize, that there's little white lies and big black lies and gray lies and different kinds of lies? How many liars will have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone? All liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone. One thing we tried, Sandy and I tried to get across to our children, and I think my parents tried to get it across to me when I was a child. Always speak the truth. We tried to drill that. I think maybe we were so successful that sometimes our children just brutally frank about things, and including what I look like. But that's all right. If we got the point across, always tell the truth. Never, ever tell a lie. And if you can't bring yourself to tell the truth, then just don't say anything. Who was it just last week said, well, what do you say if your wife asks, honey, does this make me look fat? What do you say to that? Well, the answer to that is, don't ask a question like that. If you don't want a brutally frank answer, don't ask. Because my responsibility, and by the way, her responsibility, is to be honest when asked a question. And either don't answer the question or give an honest answer. But always speak the truth. Where did lying come from? What's the source of lies? In John chapter 8, verse 44, Jesus gives us the answer to that question. John chapter 8, Jesus was talking to those Jewish rulers who refused to confess that He is the Christ, even though they recognized that He was. And He says, you are of your father, the devil, and the lust of your father you desire to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not abide in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources. For he is a liar and the father of it. When we speak things that are not true, that's what a lie is, of course, then we have not God as our Father, but we have Satan as our Father. God is the one who originated truth, and what comes from Him is truth. God cannot lie. Titus chapter 1, verse 2, in hope of eternal life, which God who cannot lie revealed before time began. And promise before time again. That's Titus chapter 1 verse 2. God cannot lie. It's against His nature. But Satan originated lying. He's the father of it. He originated slandering, which we'll talk about later on. So the first thing that we should keep in our minds when we think about my tongue, how will I use my tongue? That when I speak, I always speak the truth. That I never just talk people want to hear this, so this is what I'll say. Or this will make people feel good, so this is the way I'll say it. No. Always speak the truth. Excuse me again. Whether people want to hear the truth or don't want to hear the truth, always speak the truth. By the way, for those of us who make our living with our tongues, it means that sometimes we have to put our living in jeopardy with the use of our tongues. And any preacher that doesn't know that and is willing to face it and still speak the truth does not need to be in the pulpit. Always speak the truth. Second way that we will not use our tongues, and this is directly related to this, is by slander, by that which is spreading falsehood about other people behind their... Well, actually, slander could be to their face, but usually it's behind their back. In Proverbs chapter 10, look at verse 18. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 18. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips. And he who utters a slander. Now, slander is a lie about somebody else, and that lie is something that is to their detriment. It's speaking evil, falsely so, of other people. Now, evil speaking in of itself is wrong. But particularly a slander, which is false evil speaking of other people. And he says, whoever does that is a fool. Now, go back and look at the first part of that passage. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, is the way the New King James Version puts that. The Old King James talks about hiding hatred with lying lips, but I believe the application is the same. It's the person who outwardly presents themselves as your friend. It might even talk about how much they love you. But behind your back, when you can't defend yourself, they're saying bad things about you that are intended to destroy your reputation. Now, they may not recognize it's intended to destroy your reputation, but that's what is accomplished. And they may smile and talk about how much they love you, but they're hiding hatred, and the result is lying lips. I'm going to tell you something that happened to me one time. This may have happened to something like this to you also. Probably has to various people. But it made a big impression on me because I was the victim of it, about how much harm slander can cause. I had a doctrinal disagreement with the preacher, and I was having a study with him and some of the members of the same congregation where he preached, where I had formerly preached. And in this, I'll just tell you what the doctrinal disagreement was. He was contending that we have to sin. And I was contending we all do sin, but we sin through choice, not because we have to. And that deals with both the nature of man and the nature of God's dealing with us. And it's a very important thing, though you may not see the importance of it. And that's what we were discussing. And he had let the cat out of the bag that he was going to get up the next Sunday and preach on that subject. And that he intended to preach that he would call me by name, that I was teaching that we could go to heaven without the blood of Christ, without faith in and obedience to the gospel of Christ, without being a member of the Lord's church. And I could not get him to see, or he would refuse to see, that I was not teaching that, did not believe that. We all have sinned, therefore we all have to have the blood of Christ, we all have to believe in the gospel, obey the gospel, be a member of the Lord's church, or we can't go to heaven. That's not the question. The question is, why have we sinned? Because we have to sin, or through choice. He refused to see that. And so it had come to an impasse, and I'd gotten nowhere. And so I was leaving that meeting of the brethren there, and I almost touched his nose with my finger as I left. And I said, if you get up in the pulpit and you tell that audience that I believe that anybody can go to heaven without the blood of Christ, without faith in obedience to the gospel of Christ, without being a member of the Lord's church, you're a bold-faced liar. That's word for word what I said. You're a bold-faced liar. And that man got up in the pulpit the next Sunday and preached that Keith Sharp believes you can go to heaven without the blood of Christ, without the gospel of Christ, and without being a member of the Lord's church. And he preached two sermons on that, which he called me by name, recorded it, sent it to another preacher, and it was disseminated within a week all over the whole country. Now, what did that do to my reputation? Well, you know, I have been facing that destruction of reputation ever since. And I'm talking about something that happened about 30 years ago. You can cause a great deal of... Now, of course, obviously it hurts me to think about that. But, you know, I could be the same... Well, perish the thought. First of all, to lie about a person. Then secondly, to do my best to destroy a person's reputation. Perish the thought. But there are those who call themselves Christians. There are those who call themselves preachers of the gospel who do that. They slander. They say bad things about other people behind their back, even though they know it's not true. That's a slander. Never use the tongue that way. Never use the tongue to destroy somebody's reputation. That is slander. Now, gossip is a double first cousin. In Proverbs chapter 26, verse 20, Proverbs chapter 26, verse 20. Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no talebearer, strife ceases. That's a beautiful comparison. If you can say that anything about gossip is beautiful, but the comparison is beautiful. Any firefighter knows if one of the very effective ways to put out a fire, any kind of fire, is to take away the fuel. And if you take away the fuel, the fire will go out. Okay, and so if you have a fire that cannot be put out with water, get the fuel away from it, the fire will go out. All right, now here's a fire raging. And how do you take away, how do you kill that fire? You take the wood away from it and the fire will go out. Here is a controversy raging. People are fussing and fighting and can't get along with each other. There's some fuel that's causing that fire. If you get rid of the fuel, the fire will go out. What's the fuel? The talebearer. What's a talebearer? Somebody that picks up juicy morsels about somebody and spreads it around behind their back. And the more that's done, the more there's controversy, the more there's fussing, feuding, and fighting. My grandmother, my Mama Sharp, my dad's mother obviously, was one of nine sisters. When I was a boy, every once in a while, I saw those nine sisters get together, and then I left the room as quickly as I could. Tried to leave the house if I possibly could. Maybe some of you have been in that situation. There was one of those sisters. Now, I think all nine of them were Christians, if my memory serves correctly. But one of those sisters would get with them and start talking about one of the other sisters. And get a controversy. And then get with another one and start talking about another sister. And before you know it, there'd be the biggest feud. The Sharp family feud was going on before you knew it. Because one sister was acting as a talebearer. And I don't remember which one, and I'm thankful I don't. I wouldn't tell it anyway. But a talebearer and getting all of them fussing with each other. You didn't want to be in the house. You didn't want to be on the same block when that started. And that's how brethren treat each other sometimes. Get some kind. By the way, you know who the worst in the world are to do that? It's the reason I don't like to go to preachers' meetings. You get the preachers of a certain area together, and whatever preacher's not there, he's the subject of the conversation. That's the reason I don't like to go to preachers' meetings. That's a sin. That's how controversy is carried on. Stay out of that kind of stuff. Don't be talking about other people behind their back. That's simply what it boils down to. Even if they happen to be kin folks, don't talk about them behind their back. That's talebearing. And it's how you get controversy, and it's a misuse of the tongue. Another misuse of the tongue is over in Psalm 12. You know, the psalmist must have endured this. And have the, it takes wisdom to know that you're being a victim. And this is a psalm of David. And so I have no doubt that David endured this a lot. What do people like to do to the king? You like to butter up the king, don't you? And tell him how good he is and how wonderful he is and all those great things. And you can read, by the way, some examples of people who came before King David to see that kind of thing where they were buttering up. And he saw right through it, by the way. And we need to be wise enough when people start spreading it on thick, talking about how wonderful we are, that we recognize that, you know, you better just put that behind you and not listen to all that. But here's what David says about it. They speak, he's talking about the sons of men, people of his day. He didn't have any confidence in the people of his day. They speak idly, every one of us. Speak idly means we don't mean what we're saying. Saying one thing and mean something else. Or don't mean anything else. We're just talking to hear our heads rattle. They speak idly, everyone with his neighbor, with flattering lips and a double heart they speak. You know what that double heart is? That say one thing and mean something else. With flattering lips, you know what? That's an insincere compliment. When you tell somebody how wonderful they are in some way, but you don't mean a word of it. That's flattering lips, and it's a double heart. You say one thing, you mean something else. And by the way, it's done whether we recognize it. It's done for a reason. is in order to ingratiate ourselves with a person, and we want something good from them. And it's a form of lying. With flattering lips and a double heart they speak, may the Lord, now notice what David, here's what David thinks of those that flatter. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips. Now that's not literal to just cut their lips off. That's a figure speech where you put the part for the whole. That figure speech is called synecdoche, where you put the part for the whole. He means cut off the people. That's what he's talking about. The people that have the flattering lips. And the tongue that speaks proud things. Also there's those that brag about themselves, speak proud things. David wants all of those cut off. All proud people who boast about themselves and all who flatter others in order, well, whatever the reason for the flattery, insincere compliment. Now listen carefully, please. It's not wrong to give somebody a compliment. Don't be that kind of a person that cannot say anything good to somebody's face or behind their back. If somebody's done something good, it's encouraging, it's good to compliment them. And you read Paul's introduction to his letters. And although in those letters he may have had some very harsh things to say to brethren concerning their sins, almost invariably he began his letters in saying something to them good about them. And to give them the encouragement that it was sincere. There's nothing wrong with a sincere compliment that's given for a sincere reason, not just to get something out of somebody. But if we're just flattering, if we're just saying things we don't really mean, in order to get something from that person, that's flattery. And our thought should be what David's thought is, those that do those things should be cut off. They don't belong among God's people. You ever know somebody go, oh, you look so good today. Oh, how wonderful you look. Can you believe she's wearing that? I can't believe she got that old dress on. That's flattery. It's insincere. Whatever reason it was done for, it's wrong. And then turn back again to James chapter 3. Look again at verses 9 and 10. James chapter 3, verses 9 and 10. We mentioned this passage at the outset of the lesson. And there James says, concerning the tongue, with it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. Brethren, these things ought not to be so. The same mouth blessing and cursing. Now listen carefully, please. Cursing is not necessarily taking the Lord's name in vain. Sometimes it is, but that's actually profanity where you take the Lord's name in vain. Cursing is where you wish evil or invoke. To invoke means that you try with your mouth to bring it down upon them. Where you invoke evil or wish evil on somebody. I wish that person would just fall off a bridge and die. I wish that person... That's cursing. Where you invoke evil on other people. And with the same mouth, some brethren will praise, that's what the word bless there means, to praise. To praise our God and Father. And the same mouth, turn around and another Christian who's made in the image of God will pronounce evil upon them. Just hope something terrible happens to them. Now sometimes people do that by bringing the Lord's name into it, and that then it becomes profanity. Okay, but that's cursing. And of course, obviously it comes from a heart that is filled with hatred, and that's the reason that it's wrong. So cursing, invoking evil in other people. But then in connection with that, profanity. Profanity is using the Lord's name in vain, because that's one of the Ten Commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. I know that's part of the Old Testament. And as such, it's not applicable to us today, but the principle is taught in the New Testament. In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 28 and 29. This is Hebrews chapter 12, verses 28 and 29. The inspired writer says, therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence, that's great respect, and godly fear, the fear of God. For our God is a consuming fire. People always like to talk about, and it's true, that God is love. That's right. But we must not forget the fact that God has another side, His holiness. And the fact that God is holy means He cannot fellowship evil. He cannot fellowship sin. And he is a consuming fire. He will destroy sin and sinners. And therefore we must reverence, give him great respect. We must serve him with godly fear, the fear of God. And therefore we do not ever use his name in a light and a flippant manner. When we use the name of God, it should be used reverentially. It should be used respectfully. It should be used with recognition of the fact that we cannot idly use his name, because our service to him must be with reverence and godly fear. Now here's the application we need to make. Not only does that mean that when we couple a curse with the name of God, that it becomes profanity and makes it doubly wrong, but it also means we don't just idly use the name of God without meaning what we're saying. The favorite phrase, it just absolutely grates all over me. If you're watching television, you can't help but hear people say, "Oh, and then the name of God." That's the favorite byword of people in our generation, in our country. That's profanity. It's using the Lord's name in vain. It's irreverent. It's disrespectful. We must not be guilty of that. But brethren, we can do the same thing. Somebody says, "Oh, Lordy, what have you done? You've used the Lord's name in vain. It's profanity." Don't do that. Don't use the Lord's name without using it reverentially, without using it respectfully, thinking about what we're saying. I've got to go quickly now, because I want to finish the negative part of this sermon, get it out of the way. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 3 and 4. Please look at Ephesians chapter 5, verses 3 and 4. "But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints," and notice carefully, "neither filthiness," now that means filthy talk, dirty talk. Don't let any dirty language come out of your mouth. "Neither filthiness nor foolish talking." Now that's a very interesting word. The Greek word there, you can almost define it without knowing any Greek, and that's pretty much the way I am. Morologia. Now, logia is the word for word. Where do you think moro? It's moron talk. That's literally what that word is. No moron talk. Don't talk like a moron. That's what he's saying. Now, he does have in mind things like silly things that we say that have a double meaning. They may have a sexual meaning or a filthy meaning. That kind of thing. That is what he had. And then he also says, coarse jesting, now that's dirty jokes, "which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks." Don't let that kind of language come out of your mouth, because language reveals what your heart is. The what you say reveals what your heart is like. And when you let moron talk and dirty language and dirty jokes come out of your mouth, you know what that says about your mind? That says that your mind is a sewer ditch, and that your mouth is just a conduit to get the sewage out of your sewer ditch. That's what it says about your mind. Don't use that kind of language. And then skip back up. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. There's some words that I want to look at quickly. Ephesians 4, verse 31. "Let all bitterness is holding a grudge. Wrath is explosive anger, where you just blow up in anger and have a fit. Or just ready to fight. You see a fellow just, the veins bulging in his neck, and his face turns red, and you he's got wrath. That's explosive anger. That's ready to fight or ready to have a big argument. Bitterness, wrath, anger, that's just the general word for being angry. Clamor is loud, angry arguing. You get in a shouting match, or you just get in a name-calling contest. Arguing, but it's that loud, angry arguing, clamor, and evil speaking. That's saying bad things about other people. "Evil speaking be put away from you with all malice." And malice is the desire to hurt somebody. That all fits together, doesn't it? Now, how many times does that characterize one of us? Those things are not a part of our lives as Christians. They're not fitting for Christians. They should be put away from us. And so the loud argument in Philippians chapter 2, verse 14. I might have to teach this song sometime. Philippians chapter 2, verse 14. "Do all things without complaining and disputing. And that word disputing means arguing. It's that angry argument. It's not wrong to discuss differences. If we have differences, we ought to reasonably discuss them. But it's that angry arguing with each other. Do everything without complaining and arguing. And the final thing I want to look at is complaining. Where we cannot be pleased and we always have something bad to say about what's going on in our lives or what's going on with the church or what's going on with somebody. This is our last passage that will draw the lesson to a close. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10. Now, it was mentioned in Philippians 2:14, but I want to get 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10. Quickly, the context. Paul is warning about the danger of falling away from Christ. And he uses the example of Israel in the wilderness. And in verses 1 through 4, he gives five ways in which all of Israel was blessed through Christ. So all Israel, five different ways they were all blessed. Beginning in verse 6 down through verse 10, five ways in which almost all of them fell. There were 603,550 soldiers, men between the ages of 20 and 60, able to go to war, who left Egypt. Of that 603,550, two made it to the land of Canaan, Joshua and Caleb. Now that's pretty much everybody, isn't it? They fell in the wilderness. Now, five ways that they fell. One of them in verse 10. Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. You can read in the books of Exodus and Numbers the story of the wilderness wanderings of Israel. And you know what you read? Complaint, 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 complaint. Never get along. Always argue. All the great miracles that God did through Moses in their behalf, they didn't appreciate it. Oh, we never should have left Egypt. Why do we ever leave? Why we want to go back where all the cucumbers and the melons and the garlics and the leeks and all those things are? They were in slavery in Egypt. They wanted to go back to slavery. Always complaining. Who's in charge of what happens in our lives? Who controls the universe and all that goes on? God does. And the things that happen in our lives, God's ultimately in control. And when I'm complaining about the rule of God. I'm complaining about God's providence. I'm not appreciating what God has done in my life. And people make sacrifices to do things for the church, and those that are sitting around watching, not doing a thing, always find something wrong with it. Always complaining. One other application that will draw the lesson to a close. It really hurts me to hear people complain about the doctors and the hospital and so forth here where we live. I remember the Ozarks of Arkansas a generation ago when I was a young man. And when we couldn't even see a doctor in the town where we lived, and it's a town that's much larger than Mountain Home. We had to drive to another town. And one time went to the doctor in our town with a sick child and sat there all day long with a sick child and never got to see the doctor. I remember that. I don't think I'll ever forget it. I remember going to Africa and seeing brothers and sisters dying and without the money to get any medical help. And all they could do was just pray that the Lord might deliver them, if not, that they'd be saved and go to heaven. I know just this last year receiving email from Brother Chizuru Odomilam in Aba, Nigeria, with whom I have worked. And a sister in the congregation there dying of breast cancer with no money. And she was a young woman with a baby. And not one thing could be done. No doctor, no medicine, no hospital. Just wait for her to die and hope she didn't suffer too much, and who's going to take care of the baby. I've seen that. And we complain about what we have, brothers and sisters, we should be ashamed. We ought to praise and thank God every day for the wonderful blessings that we have here with great gratitude. And that includes the medical help that we have here. That's the lesson. Now that's the negative lesson. It's out of the way. We're going to talk about the proper use of the tongue the next time we talk about the tongue and how we can use it in a proper way. So that'll be positive, and we'll build on that, on what we've talked about today. There may be somebody that audits today that needs to make your life right with the Lord. Our song is number 283.